shidduch made by her father, who insisted that she marries only the top of the crop of the brain from the Lublina yeshiva. Mother said it will take me hours and almost done. Anyhow, so as I said before, Yitzchak Yaakov at that time was already a widower. He was a widower at a very, very young age. So he married his two daughters.
Do you know approximately like what year that may have been when he was born?
No, but my mother said he was at the very early of his 40s. Mm. Or toward the, he was in his 40s, that's for sure.
You know, I think your mother also said he never remarried.
He never remarried, and my grandmother lived with him. And when she married, my grandfather wanted to live in Mlava, in another home, not in home of his father-in-law. So, Yitzchak Yaakov.
Quick interruption. Were the Nukeviches from Mlava?
No, they're not. They are, I do not know exactly from where, but we can find it from my mother. But anyhow, because of this, Yitzchak Yaakov bought her a home with few apartments, because at that time it was customary to buy a home that will also provide you when you are old, so that you will have, you know, tenants, and from the rent, if God forbid something happens, you will be able to survive. So he bought them, and there were two stores in that house, that home. And then he came to live with my grandfather, whom he liked very much. But when the war broke out, the First World War, they all ran to the estate of the Nutkeviches. And Yitzchak Yaakov refused to leave. And his property and everything was confiscated by the Germans.
Are you sure it was the Germans, not the Russians?
No, the Germans. And they took everything away from him. And he died very shortly. You know, he refused to leave the house. You know, he said that if he's going to stay there, then they will not take it away from him.
And they took it.
They took it away from him, and he died at a very early age because of it. Because he was poor, and if you wrote to, he became very poor. You know, from a very rich man, he became very poor. But if I remember correct, you told me that he died of hunger.
According to Arnold Tackner, who was one of Shlomo's, who was Yitzchak Yaakov's grandson,
mm-hmm.
that during World War One there was a lot of famine.
Yes.
And a lot of disease in Mlava.
Well, that's why they moved to the Russian part, or to another city, I do not know exactly. But they moved to my grandmother's Rosa in-laws. But it wasn't in-laws, it was the in-law mother, because my grandfather, Heinrich, lost his father in an early age. So, that's it, part of it. Now, in Mlava, they had a house with apartments, six apartments, plus two stores in the front, you know. But my grandfather was the most strangest and generous person in the whole world. People couldn't afford the rent, he says, don't worry, you'll pay it next month. That's how he was. Now, when he was in his 30s, he used to go, they had a flour mill. The flour mill was close to Warsaw, okay? So he had Goy as his, not chauffeur, but his, you know, how do you call it? A coachman. Okay, that drove him everywhere. and he was not Jewish. And he was stopped by the Poles, and they demanded money. He bought fields before they were cropped. You know, he bought the field so that he'll have wheat. And he bought it from a goy. It was, well, it's called a Pruitz, you know. And that Pruitz used to sell him the crop for, let's say, for the year 1918, but he bought it at the beginning of 1918, so before even there was anything. So he took a risk, because otherwise he couldn't buy it. So the goy took him to that point, and they were stuck, and they asked him for money, and he said he didn't have, because he didn't do any business, only cash, you know. So they beat him up.
The grandfather Connor?
Yes, they beat him up and told him that he's hiding, and the truth was, he was really hiding. He had a fur coat that had a hidden pocket done, especially when he was going to buy the wheat, so that nobody will know. But the goy knew that my grandfather was coming with, you know, money. So they beat him up, and they couldn't find the money, so they sent him to walk. He was 36 years old at that time, to walk the rest of the way back. When he was about a mile or two on his way by foot, he took the money out and he put it under a rock. And the Polacks came back running, and they said they want his coat because they have he has a hidden pocket. And they took the coat from him. They looked it all over, and there was nothing in it. They tore it up because he had the foresight to take the money out and hide it under a rock. Well, he managed to get to the Pruitz, which is, you know, like the Vassal. You know what, remember Rocky told you that it was like a prince the people worked under, had rented land to work under
him. A serfdom.
Yes. So he got a heart attack.
At the age of 36.
Age of 36. And had to be, you know, unmoved, you know, had to stay at the goy, Pruitz, for about 3-4 weeks.
And he was welcome to?
Very, very welcome to. And they brought heart specialist from Warsaw to look him up. And after he was able to travel again, they sent, you know, a cart to bring him over. So since the age of 36, he started deteriorating. But my grandmother, Rosa, had a stiff leg.
Caused by what?
By childbirth. She got an infection, and they wanted to amputate her leg. It was her right leg, and she refused to. So my grandfather took her to Warsaw, to a Jewish hospital, and she stayed there for more than a year, and they finally saved the leg. But she used to drag it, you know, she used to go like this.
Yeah.
Stiff.
Stiff leg.
Bent it. And he, with heart condition, used to bend and tie her shoes. Yes, she was very elegant. My mother says that when she got up in the morning, before anybody got up. She got dressed up, put her shaitel on, and an apron, a white apron, and when the shiksa came, you know, she was ready, you know, telling what to do.
And they could afford.
They could have afford. They had a shiksa. Her name was Grobe Elisha, Grobe Olesha.
Mm.
Now, Grobe is fat, you know, a grobe.
Mm-hmm.
She was very fat in Polish, so they called her the Grobe Olesha. And she did all the hard work. Then, in their yard, in the backyard, they had a house guest, a little cottage. And there lived the Jewish maid that was a widow with her son. And she did all the cooking because my grandfather wouldn't eat food that was prepared by a boy. So she did all the cooking, all the serving. My grandmother, this is what my mother doesn't know how to cook, you know, never did anything in her life. You know, she was raised as a princess. She was also the youngest of Yitzchak Yaakov children. And she got everything. So, by the way, there's a story about that, which is, this is Rechilis, you know what Rechilis is.
You know, let's make
gossip.
It. Yeah, true Lashon Hara.
Yes, but she's not alive anymore, and I don't know her name. No, her name was Sarah. More than that, I don't know. But my grandmother got, for one of her wedding anniversary, a diamond set of necklace, bracelet, and earrings.
It's big.
And a ring.
Expensive stuff.
Very, very expensive. And it was stolen. It was in a safe in the ground, in the house. And the only one who knew about that safe was the Jewish lady, the Jewish maid.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know who went to her, but I think Shmuel, who was my mother's older brother, went to her and told her that he understands that she's in a bad economic situation, but to steal is worse more than anything else in the world. And she has more to gain by returning it. So she said she didn't steal it, and then miraculously she found it in my grandparents' room. And by the way, when there were restitutions given to people in Poland only, but for furs and jewelry, they didn't give the Germans for anything more. My mother and my uncle got together $4,000 only. It was symbolic, because she could prove about all the jewelry that my grandmother had. And that's why she got it. Otherwise she wouldn't have got anything. And my father didn't get anything because he couldn't prove anything. My parents got, my mother got $4,000. She could have gotten much more because the Germans found the telephone of my aunt, Hannah, the oldest one, in Danzig, and they found all the accounts, the money accounts, in the banks. Because, as I told you before, the money was frozen, and she couldn't take it out.
Mm-hmm.
So, my parents had a crook for a lawyer, and according to later on, they found out they could have gotten a fortune because she was the only survivor in the business of poultry transportation through whole Europe. Was under my grandfather's name, Heinrich, and my aunt, Hannah. So because of this...
Your aunt?
Han, the oldest one. My mother's sister.
Okay.
So...
And Hannah did not survive.
Hannah did not survive, and neither his son. She could have come with the illegal immigration to Israel through Danzig. But the point was they didn't take small children because they will make noise and the British will catch them. So they refused to take them. Many parents gave shots to their kids.
To knock them out?
To knock them out. And that's how they brought them. So then Hannah, by that time, my grandfather died. It was in 1939. Heinrich died in 1939. When my mother left to Israel, he told my mother, "Astro, mein Kind, if you're leaving," I'm saying it in English, okay?
Mm-hmm.
"If you're leaving Poland, I will not survive more than 3 days." She was the apple of his eye.
Is your mother the youngest?
Yes. But actually not the youngest according to the childbirth.
Mm-hmm.
Because after her was a child named Yitzchak, after Yitzchak Yaakov,
mm-hmm.
Tachna. And he was, when he was 13 years old, I don't know if it was just after the Bar Mitzvah or before the Bar Mitzvah, he studied in a yeshiva high school, and it had two story, and one of the kids, as a joke, pushed him, and he fell off two stories, and got water in his brain from the fall. And they said that he's a goon. You know what's a goon?
A genius.
He's a genius, and also he is going to amount something. He's going to be somebody great. And he was the apple of my grandfather and grandmother. And because he was also the youngest one, when he died, my grandfather couldn't take it anymore. And he was afraid to tell that he was thrown, because my grandfather at that time suffered very badly from, he had angina pectoris. So he didn't want, angina pectoris is a deterioration of the heart and the muscles surrounding the heart, if I'm correct.
Heart disease.
Yes. And, you know, if he would have lived now, they would have made a bypass and he would have survived another 34 years. But that time, the only thing that they knew how to treat was to give him valerian drops to calm him, and they put wet compresses on his heart. That's all what they can do. When Yitzchak died, the youngest child at my mother's home, my grandfather, Heinrich, took my mother under her wings and made her his yoyresh. You know what's a yoyresh? The one who is going to inherit. But he didn't mean inherit all the money, but inherit all his knowledge. Now, according to Judaism, you are forbidden to teach a girl Torah. And he taught my mother Mishnah and Gemara and Talmud every Saturday or Friday. Yes, and this is how my mother knows so well and is versed in Judaism, because of it. So she was the apple of my grandfather's eyes, and when she left to Israel, we picked up. My mother left to Israel in 1939. I don't know exactly the month. She left on a boat. There was no airplane at that time.
Oh, when she left for Israel, how old was she? I mean, what was...
She was 19.
So the year of her birth was 1920?
No, 1911.
1911. left in 39?
Mm-hmm. She was 19 years old. 18, 19.
I'm sorry. My math is terrible.
No. I'm not that perfect in high math. But in basic math, I'm perfect. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So, when my mother came to Israel, there was a cable already waiting there to tell her that her father died. Yes, and it took 2 weeks to get to Israel.
Okay.
So she couldn't sit Shiva because it was, you know.
Israel expired.
Mm-hmm. So, and it was sent to my uncle, who by that time was married.
And this was your Uncle David?
Yes, yes. Who lost his first child to blood poisoning. He had a little girl by the name of Esther. She was...
Let me ask real quick before you go into
mm-hmm.
your uncle's first child. When your grandfather Chanuch died in
mm-hmm.
1939, do you know what his age was? How old he was?
He was at the very beginning of 50.
50.
Mm-hmm. Very beginning of 50.
And was your grandmother about the same age as her husband was?
Close to. They were close to the same age.
Okay.
Anyhow, when she came to Israel, as I said before, he just lost his first child, which was a girl. Her name was Esther. And there is a superstition in Judaism that you do not, at least at the Ashkenaz, because the Sephardic Jews, if you are Robert,
mm-hmm.
to honor you, your son or your daughter will name their first child after you. You know, like Robert Jr. in the United States.
Yeah, like the Gentile custom.
Yes. But it's an old Sephardic custom that Ashkenaz people believe that if you name somebody while somebody is alive, one of them has to go.
Like there's not room for both.
Yes. And she died. I don't know if because my mother had to survive the war and live. She was not too. You know, it's very hard to believe in, you know, old wives' tales. But at that time, my uncle worked at the electric company in Israel. You have to know that at that time the economic situation was very bad in Israel. Very bad. And you were lucky if you had anything to eat on the table. And my uncle worked as an electrician. He was an electrician like I'm an astronaut on the moon. You know, but anything that his eyes saw, he could do. Anything. And spied golden hands. Do you know what that means?
He had golden hands?
Golden hands. Chanuch has inherited from him the touch for his hands.
Chanuch's an engineer, is he not?
No, Chanuch is not an engineer. Chanuch finished, it was school for fine as a fine technician. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so when my mother came to the port, the one who picked her up was my aunt Zipporah. And she has never seen my mother.
Was your aunt Zipporah a Sabra? Was she a
No, aunt Zipporah is a Polish. And she came with my uncle David on the same ship to Israel, and they fell in love on the ship.
That's romantic.
Yes, and got married. She was very pretty, by the way.
Yes.
Pretty, very pretty. And funny enough, she also had a long, long braid that she wore. I have at home in Utah a picture of them both, you know, when they got married. So that when you come here to Shem, you can see it. Mm-hmm. Anyhow. still remember it. Who's La Amsler?
Amsler.
I know it's funny, but sometimes you remember names that you don't even realize.
Mm-hmm.
And when she went off the ship, my aunt said, well, can you point for me who is Esther, my Schwägerin, which is my sister-in-law? And she said to her, this is the lady. Mother came down with a fantastic suit and that you know the fox shawl that you had, that the legs showed and the head. You know what I'm talking about, the pictures you showed me?
Yeah, very expensive, very...
Very expensive. And she came with snake shoes, snake purse and snake gloves.
Also expensive material.
Yes. Well, don't forget that they were very wealthy and they could afford it.
Mm-hmm.
So my aunt's reaction was, is this doll my sister-in-law?
Mm-hmm.
And Husa Amza said, oh yes, that's her. So she took my mother to her home, and my mother asked, where is my brother? Because she was surprised that he didn't come to pick her up from the ship. And she told my mother, oh, he had to go on business, but he'll be home in about 3-4 days. And after 3-4 days, he didn't come. And at that time, very few people in Israel had a telephone at all. And no letters came, so my mother got suspicious. And my aunt finally broke down and told her that my uncle fell from a 4-story electric pole and broke both his legs to pieces and was in hospital. So she came to visit him and she stayed at their home very short time because she felt that she was imposing on them, especially their economic situation was very bad.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very bad. They just lost a child and my uncle lost his job, and because he was handicapped, couldn't do anything. So my mother went to Pardes Chana. Have you heard that name?
Yeah, I've heard it. It's a town. I've heard you mention it.
It's a small town where they had, where all the orange groves were, and the citrus and the grapefruits. And she went to pick oranges. You did anything in Israel to survive at that time. And she didn't know the language, but she registered at the Hebrew University, which was among Scopus at that time.
Did your mother not arrive in Israel with the pre-program of being a student? I mean,
yes.
She already had a school seminar?
But her father died. And money didn't come from Poland.
She needed to support herself.
You see, the plan was that my grandfather will send her every month money. And he couldn't send because he died. And then the war broke out right 3 or 4 months later on. So my aunt, Hannah wrote to, I'm not looking at the clock, I'm looking to remember, wrote a letter to my mother asking her to disown herself from the inheritance so that they can give it all to the mother and maybe even sell part of it, because there was not even money to buy bread, because their accounts were frozen.
The Nazis had it frozen all.
Yes, the Nazis froze everything. So my mother signed it, and so did my uncle, and they sent it to Poland. you know, so that the Poles will not say, well, there is other people to inherit, therefore you cannot do anything and an excuse. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And while she was picking oranges, she met my father. Now my father was, at that time, he was heading the labor office in Father's Chana, which means if came to him an orchard owner and said, I need 50 people to pick my oranges and my citrus fruit, then my father would arrange for people who needed work to go there and work. So my mother knew about picking oranges like you know about the moon. Maybe you know a bit more.
I saw the tapes of the Astrobot.
And she went to work there with snake shoes, high heels, gloves, and a purse. You know, she wanted to make a good impression and didn't know what it was. And she was the joke of the crop pickers. But, you know, and they asked her, have you ever worked in picking? Oh, sure. So they wanted to see her hands. And her hands was, you know, where, you know,
soft as
silk. And they said, you didn't work, tell the truth. And she says, well, I used to wear gloves. And they said, did you wear those gloves? And she says, yes, of course, they're leather. That's why they're keeping so well. And they said to her, well, the gloves would have not survived 5 minutes working. But she said, I'm a quick learner, and if you don't like me after a week, you can fire me. Well, they liked her, and she stayed there. But because she didn't get money anymore from Poland, she had barely made money to survive. So, she was afraid to buy food and lived on, why don't you put, Robert, more cold water? She lived on dates and tea. And if she felt really rich, she went for a toast. In one of the evenings that she felt rich and went to have a toast with a girlfriend of her, there was sitting in the restaurant a man, extremely handsome, dressed to the hilt, and ate like a pig, and ate red meat, which is, first of all, in Israel, red meat is very expensive in our day, too. And second, it was impossible to get it, because for years, the red meat came from Argentina.
That's a long way.
Mm-hmm. It used to come from Argentina, the red meat. So, and he was dressed up very nice, and she heard him speak Polish. My mother didn't know Hebrew at that time. So she approached him and asked him, Ktol Godzina, what's the time? And he looked at her, and that was it. Afterwards, she left the restaurant with her girlfriend, and he followed her home. Literally followed her home. And she panicked, because she was afraid that, you know, going to mug her or whatever it is, although in Israel, mugging and rape didn't exist. Because at that time, when you left your home, you left your door open. And you knew that every piece of pin or brush, you'll find it in the same spot. So he walked behind her and asked her for a date. And she told him he's crazy. So they have started to date. And then my father proposed to her on the third date. Did Rafi tell you how he proposed to me? But anyhow, he proposed to her, and they got married 6 months. They married so quickly for one big reason. My father didn't want my mother to work anymore in the orchard, you know, and pick up oranges. That's A. B, my mother agreed because she didn't have a family, she didn't have a home, and she shared a room in an inn, you know, with 5 girls in one room. And she was used to luxury and privacy. And suddenly, you know, to fall from grace so quickly and so down was impossible for her and hard. So they got married in 6 months. And I came to the world 4 years later on.
Mm.
Yes. They couldn't afford to bring a child to the world because I told you they were on the run from the first underground and then the Jewish brigade, you know, that wanted to send my father.
Yes, can you go into that?
Yes, I can go into this. Then after they got married, okay, I think it was in 1939. By the way, they're going to have now their 40, because at the very beginning, no, in Pesach they married, okay, in Lag BaOmer. That's exactly the date. But let's see. I think because they're going to celebrate their anniversary, or 59 or 60 is now. So 120. But and then my mother stopped working. And they lived in Pardes Chana, and my father, as I told you, was heading the labor. He was not labor party, but the labor office, because the Pardes Chana was an orchard town. Then came the people from the Haganah, and because my father spoke and still speaks fluently Polish and German and Yiddish, they wanted to send him to Europe back to be a contact for the Haganah and the illegal immigration to help smuggle Jews. And my mother was afraid, so he hid for a few years. Not the years, but 6 months they hid.
From the Haganah?
Not from the Haganah. From... You mentioned that word before. Not under...
Jewish Brigade?
The Jewish Brigade they hid.
Which is really an extension of the British Army.
Yes. So they hid for 6 months. They left all their furniture. They had a rented room. That's all what they had. Houses was impossible to find in Israel. Years ago there was shortage of houses, and on top of it, you know, people couldn't afford it, so they rented a room and shared a kitchen and a bathroom with another one or two families. This is how it existed. And my mother worked in odd jobs just to keep them afloat. For example, they needed kerosene to cook with this, because years ago there was no electric stoves in Israel or gas stoves. It was all cooked. Still, when I was born, and I would say until I was about 7 years old, my mother cooked on kerosene. Not because they were poor like a church mice, but because that's how it was done. And after this, my father got an, then he worked after this as a gafir. Gafir was a policeman for the British army. He was patrolling the borders. And I'll tell you something which is bashert. One night my mother got crazy, quote unquote, and told him that she doesn't want him to leave their home and go to patrol the border. And he said, I can't, I have to go, because you will not have money to buy bread tomorrow. And she said, I want to be starved, but you're not going. So he went to a friend of his and asked him if he can, you know, take his shift and he'll take the friend's shift the next day. Well, the next day he found out his friend, there was an ambush of the Arabs, and the friend was killed. So, you know, it was bashert for him to live. And after he was a gafir, which is, you know, a border patrol police for the British, he was offered, then my mother got pregnant, that was already, you know, 4 years to the marriage, three years to the marriage. He was offered in Kiryat Motzkin a job to be the chief controller of the biggest Mediterranean camp in Israel and the whole Mediterranean.
Mediterranean camp of refugees, or?
No, it was Mediterranean army supply camp.
For the British?
And headquarters in the north and close to the port.
For the British Army?
Yes, for the British Army. So, he didn't know the language, but he was had to signal with a friend when to say yes and when to say no, or when to say sure. Well, three words or two words that he knew. And he said it, and they hired him on the spot, you know. And when he hired him, the Haganah kind of forgave him, because, and by the way, he was in the Haganah from the very beginning.
Beginning meaning?
Beginning of the Haganah itself, the organization. He has still, there is very few people left in Israel that got that medal of the Haganah. He has it, my father. And it's not here, it's in Israel. But he worked there, and every day to help the Haganah, they needed, you know, barbed wire, they needed ammunition, they needed cement, because you couldn't get cement either, you know, to fortify kibbutzim and other settlements. So they asked my father to take a net, quote unquote, and at that time they came with trucks and smuggled everything out of the British camps. And once there was something missing, and my father was pulled on the carpet, and he said, look, I went for my lunch break. I went home to eat. I don't know anything about it. So they investigated, they found it, and he was cleared, and the smuggling continued. That's it. This is how he helped the Haganah. By the way, he also had the highest security clearing in Israel, my father.
For any Jew for the British Army? Or?
No. When the State of Israel was established, like in Beersheba, there is the atomic research and the rest of the atomic industry. So he used to bring heavy water there and go in deep to all the tunnels and everything that were forbidden to anybody.
This was what, in the late 40s?
No, that was in the beginning of 50s already. Yes, and that clearance was left for him until the day he left Israel. Now, when he finished with the British, okay, what do you do? You know, there was no industry in Israel. There is no business, and they didn't have money. Although they built, they were starting to build a home, you know. No, there's no Teamsters. It is strictly private owners. And
there's no unions?
No, doesn't exist a union, nothing. It's private owners and private shares. But that's how it goes. So they did a trucking company. Well, the partner was really a schlamazel. The partner was the husband of that girlfriend that you saw the picture with her daughter. Okay? And he was a real schlamazel. Mm. Every day he broke another truck. They had two trucks and he broke them. Every day. One was fixed and one was broken. And you cannot, you know, make money on one truck, mm-hmm. You know. So he told his partner that he cannot continue this way anymore, and that he's going to buy a share in one of the biggest trucking company in Israel that now it almost doesn't exist. You know, but it was the biggest one. And funny enough, most of the members of that trucking company were from Poland. Mm. And you know who was one of the members there?
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard about Martin Buber, the philosopher, the Jewish philosopher?
Yeah. Sure.
You know.
He was a trucker?
His son.
His son?
Yes.
No kidding.
Worked with my father in the same company, mm-hmm. And owned a share. But he was older than my father, his son. So my father went there, but then they saw that he has a good cop for business. So they insisted that he gets off the trucking and becomes, you know, in the... you know, as the managing director of the whole North of Israel trucking business. And my father went off, but then they needed money to build. And in Israel was, if you worked additional hours, you got overpaid. But then you got overpaid. They got overpaid double for what they would do in a regular hour. So my father went off. Okay. My father went back to do trucking because I studied at the conservatory. And I also was in high school. And in Israel, the high schools are not government. They are private in Israel. And to be a student in a high school, and you are an only one child, you do not get any scholarships, even if you are the most brightest person in the whole world. So, I have ended up, you know, so my father went up because it was 60 pounds. Just to pay for 4 lessons a week in music, and there was 65 pounds to pay for a month in high school. So it was a fortune. With that money, you can almost live 3 weeks in Israel and live really very comfortable. So my father went up to trucking, and he did it until Rafi and I got married. And then he went back to the administration. And
which administration?
Of the company itself.
Oh, okay.
That he was a shareholder there. And two years after we left Israel, they came to the States because I forced them to come. Because I'm an only one child, and I knew that I cannot come every year to Israel, and I didn't want to see my parents once a year. You know, and the telephone was very expensive to call Israel in those days.
Still is?
Yes, but not as much as it was those days. So, they came to the States. And then we lived at that time in Minneapolis.
I remember that. I remember that name. What
is that name?
How do you spell it?
Depends how you...
No, because it's
B-R-I-N-A.
Oh, because...
It's your great-grandmother.
No, well, the reason Jane is asking is her mother's maiden name.
It's Briner.
It's Briner.
B-I-N-E-R.
Well, it depends on how you spell it, you know. Doesn't
that's all cool. There it is.
She was living on the West 92nd Street, right?
Uh-huh.
So we were talking. I said, oh, your mother is living with you. But she said, no. I live there. If they want to say to me, it's mother, you know, more.
Yes.
I'm living with her.
I remember them talking about lady, but I don't remember them talking about the mother. I'm trying to think how I would have known the mother's name. What was her first name?
My name?
No.
Her first name was Briner.
Her first name was Briner?
No.
I think it...
Briner Tafna.
An English the name was Becky.
I don't remember that at all. I don't remember any of that at all.
She's, of course, from the old Polish record I sent you.
Mm-hmm.
The bride, you know, too.
Yes.
Yeah. Brachale in Hebrew, Becky in English, Briner maybe in Yiddish.
But I only remember hearing talk about Levy, not about her at all. I remember talk about her. Levy. My great-grandfather.
Label.
Okay, but I always heard it as Levy. Mm.
Label.
Yeah.
Maybe, sure.
Let's just see what her name is.
Oh, yes?
Yeah. In Hebrew?
Oh,
in Hebrew?
Was
that what it is?
No, in Yiddish.
Oh, in
Yiddish? In Yiddish. In Hebrew they call Yehuda.
Aria
Yehuda.
Genealogy of the Navy.
The Aria, that are... That are
it's so difficult because you do not know if this Löwe, that's Lionel, or if it's the real Levy. When I was about to marry Ruthie, we had to go to the rabbinate. They was these little rabbis. They started putting me in front of an inquisition. Am I Jewish? Yes, I think so. Is your mother Jewish? You know, her name is Lindenberg, and with you German Jews, nobody knows. And I said, but my father and his before him went to the Torah as number two. Is that enough? that was enough.
Because the Levi, you know, this is between Jews, you have the highest is the Kohen. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Then is the Levi, the second, the third.
Mm-hmm.
Then the third
the
is the Israel.
Is
this one, yeah. I got right for the
Aunt Esther,
yeah.
Do you remember the family back in Poland? Levi, Tekna, Lionel's great-grandfather, and your grandparents. Can you recall a little bit how the family lived back in Malava and what life was like back then for us?
The